This is episode 3 of the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to the third episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simoons, and as usual, I'm your host. Today I will be talking to Joe Kittel, and Joe is an experienced alliance manager who built his experience during 16 years in alliance management in HP. And as you will hear in this podcast, Joe is using some examples of alliances he was involved in between HP and some other large corporations. Ever since Joe left HP, he started his own company, and he has his focus on the spiritual principles in strategic alliances, and we will dive into that also in this podcast. Spiritual might sound fake to some people, as I mentioned also during the conversation with Joe, but Joe can excellently tell you why it's not and why it's very important to have the spiritual principles in relationships and also in strategic alliances. Joe is the author of a book also called Spiritual Principles in Strategic Alliances. You will find a link to the book in the show notes on simoons.com/episode3. And as Joe describes himself in the book on the back of the book, he is transforming the world by fundamentally changing the artful science of strategic alliance management. Well, let's dive in to the topic with Joe, and you will probably hear that there is much more to it than we can only discuss in this 30 minutes in today's conversation. So I expect we will hear back from Joe in 2014. Joe, welcome. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. And it's great to have you. We've spoken a lot of times, but it's good to share some of the things we discussed over the past years with a wider audience. But before we do, why don't you introduce yourself and give the audience a perspective of who you are?
Okay. And thank you for doing this, Peter. I think these podcasts are great. And it's nice to span the Atlantic. So just as a brief introduction, even though I am a coach and a consultant to alliance managers and organizations, I think of myself as a strategic alliance manager. I did this for 16 years. And it's something that I love, I have a passion for, and I think of myself as an alliance manager. I did this for 16 years at HP. And so my focus is on alliance managers, and it's also on making fundamental change in the alliance managers first and then in their alliances. And this really comes from my college. I was an electrical engineer. And so I have a bias or a focus towards, number one, value creating relationships. The engineer side of me says, hey, if it's sells or marketing kind of relationship, it doesn't really count. Mm-hmm. I know that's an extreme position.
But I recognize the position. Don't worry.
And I'm also very focused on the fundamentals. I mean, I really enjoyed chemistry and calculus and physics in school, because once you figured out the fundamental principles, past experience coalesced, you became empowered as you understood how things worked. And in a sense, you're inspired to bring on other challenges. So that's my three focuses: on alliance managers, on value creating relationships, and on making a fundamental contribution.
Great. And you do that at the moment from your own company, I understood.
Yes, I have my own consultancy in Colorado in the U.S.
Okay, great. Now, you already are zooming a little bit in on the topic during your introduction, whereas this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, and you are already aiming on being a strategic alliance manager.
Yes.
So if we look at that whole collaborative business spectrum, which is a quite a broad spectrum, mm-hmm. What's for you a business collaboration?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what in business is not a collaboration of some form?
Yeah.
So I think really all we have are relationships. But, you know, my definition of a strategic alliance is a long-term value creating business relationship. And I think it really comes down to those two things, you know, typically beyond the 3 to 5 year planning horizon. And the companies are coming together to create product or technology. So they're doing something together they cannot do by themselves. Probably the best example from my HP experience, and I wasn't involved in this alliance, but is the HP Canon alliance, where Canon provides the laser engines and HP creates the printers. And those two companies, I think the alliance may be roughly 30 years old. And they created the desktop publishing market. They created laser printers. And there's an interesting thing about focusing on value creation. And it's my experience, my theory, that these kind of relationships are the most challenging form of intercompany relationship. You're trying to get companies that are fiercely competitive in a climate that it tends to be kind of fear-based. You know, jobs are at question and, you know, your win is my loss. So you're trying to get collaboration, value creation to happen in that kind of environment. And so focusing on value creating relationship requires us to focus on the fundamentals, and it forces us to think clearly. So being focused on value creation and understanding the fundamentals has actually drawn me to, I think, a unique position in the world of business and in alliances in particular, where I'm about the practical application of spiritual principles. And I define spirituality as not necessarily religion. It's about principles and ideas, practices, behaviors, things we can think about or do that have as a result the deepening of relationship here and now. And research has shown that most alliances fail, mostly due to failure in relationship. Mm-hmm. So spirituality is about addressing that head on. You know, alliance managers need to be clear, bold, and direct. People have challenged me, do I really need to use that spiritual word? And I've not found a better word that talks about some substance, something that's alive within us and between us that we can use to increase the value creation in a strategic alliance.
Which is quite interesting, because on one hand, you are talking about value creation and you're connecting it to it, your engineering education, where right. It seems to be very abstract. On the other hand, you're connecting it to spiritual and relationship, which is, for some people, a little bit fake.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting mixture. And I think focusing on the fundamentals is part of what brought me to the spiritual idea, and then life experience. I don't hide this fact that I'm a recovering drug addict. I just celebrated 13 years clean.
Congratulations.
And AA, and thank you. AA and NA describe, you know, the disease of alcoholism or addiction as being a spiritual malady, a spiritual disease. And so probably, you know, about 13 years ago, I'm looking for how I can practice a 12th step, which is to practice these principles in all of my affairs, and really had a quest back around 2003 when I started heading over to Germany to figure out how this can apply into the world of business. And, you know, I think it is addressing the fundamentals. So, yeah, it's an interesting mixture of engineering and spiritual, you know, hand waving or spiritual foo-foo, people would say. But it's a very practical and real mixture, and it has some real benefit. And I would credit this approach as accomplishing the impossible at between HP and SAP in Germany, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay. So you also already mentioned it in your introduction, I think, but how important is collaboration for your business? You said something like you believe that we cannot do anything without collaboration, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I think all there is in life and so all there is in business is relationship, you know, And what business is about fundamentally is the creation of value and the exchange of value. And all of that happens in some kind of collaborative relationship of some form. It could be internal within the business collaboration or external. Mm-hmm. But I think if we really honestly look at it, there's nothing in business beyond collaborative value creation and collaborative value exchange.
Okay. And yeah, I'm thinking, of course, how to challenge you on this one. And because are all businesses collaborative? I would tend to say all businesses need to be collaborative, but are all businesses already collaborative?
Well, I would agree and disagree. I think, you know, to the level we've experienced it in strategic alliances, they need this level of collaboration. But they have some degree of collaboration already. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just give me your product and I'll give you my money, there is some level of collaboration.
Yes, because give me your product, I give you my money is purely a transaction. So yes. I buy a bottle of water from you, you hand me the water, I hand you your money, and that's it. End of transaction, end of trust. We need end of relationship if there is already a relationship just for that transaction.
Yeah. But I agree. The world could use more of the collaboration that we live and breathe each day.
Yeah. How would you organize collaboration or strategic alliances in organizations?
Well, you know, I thought back to my experience at HP, and actually the first question is, I mean, we're talking about relationships. And I think there's a lot of metaphor we can draw from personal relationships. You know, so how do we organize our personal relationships? And I'd say you do and you don't. Mm-hmm. In a very real way, I think. Well, I mean, I think there's obvious basic structure that has to be in place in any relationship. And how I've done it is, you know, first of all, I have executive sponsor on each side. I'll have a core team and then an extended team. But that core team and the extended team, in a sense, is self-organized or self-defined based on the value that is intended to be created in that relationship. So I'd say let the value vision, the value objectives drive the structure. Don't have it artificially constrained. And, you know, I think with that kind of focus, you have top to bottom alignment. You can have top to bottom alignment on the value creation and the removal of value impediments. So one of the key tools that I am really passionate about and have provided to my clients and consulted on some challenging engagements is what I call the two-slide methodology. And it's based on, you know, 30 years, now 30 years of research at the Program on Negotiation at Harvard, MIT, and Tufts University, and my 16 years of experience and working collaboratively with Vantage Partners at HP. But what I've discovered is that any alliance can be more than adequately represented with two slides. And the value of that approach is that it cuts through the complexity and actually can end up cutting through some of the dysfunctional drama. But this is a tool or methodology or process that I found brings organization and structure to an alliance. And maybe I'll just describe the two slides quickly here for those who are not familiar with it.
Because I feel that two slides is not enough. We've seen so many situations where we have huge decks, huge contracts, huge procedures. So how can you say that two slides is enough? And I'm challenging a bit here, of course.
No, please do challenge me. So, there, you know, this is simple, but it's not easy. So it takes considerable work, and I would say creativity and vision to be able to create the two slides. But let me describe the two slides in an order that most people wouldn't think is appropriate. So the first of all, the two slides are incremental value and value impediments. And often when I ask a client or I'm working myself within an alliance, I'll ask people, okay, so where do you want to start? And they always say, well, let's start with the incremental value. Let's start with the good stuff. And what I really come to realize is, no, that's the wrong one to work on. The one to work on is the value impediments. What's standing in the way of our collaboration? What are the challenges? And inevitably, they come up in the form of cultural differences. And I simplify cultural differences is how we see the world and how we see ourselves. So what's our perspective? And then strategic differences. So it's really focused on, as we're working together, how do we see the other company and how do we see ourselves? And it's a series of, my experience is it takes around 6 to 8 interviews on each side of the alliance. And typically these alliances cover R&D, marketing, sales, often legal and finance. They'll cover, you know, from the executive level down to what I call the worker bee level. So it's important to sample from people who are in the relationship, working in different functional areas and different levels, and say, how you're working together, what are the challenges? What do you see in the other side? What do you see in yourself? What do you think they see in themselves and see in you? So it's around sharing perspective across the interface. And probably the best example I have of this comes from the HP Microsoft corporate level alliance, and then more finely tuned into HP services, where we were Microsoft's first enterprise hosted exchange provider. And we had an opportunity at American Express in Phoenix, where within 1 hour of each, I had the lead sales reps call me and tell me, basically in different words than this, but they said, in effect, you got to get the other guy off the account. He's devious. He's crazy. He's incompetent. You know, Microsoft doesn't understand complex enterprise sales, for example. HP doesn't understand software. We're not aggressive enough. So at that time, we had been working probably about 2 or 3 years on this value impediment slide for spanning the corporate cultures and spanning the strategic chasm. And I went down to Phoenix and I walked each company through it. And this is, by the way, is written up in a Harvard Business Review article entitled Simple Rules for Making Alliances Work. And this one slide is in there. And once I was able to methodically, unemotionally walk each sales rep lead through this one slide and help them understand how the other side viewed the other, how they viewed themselves, their worldview, if you will, they could then understand their behavior and realize it wasn't a sign of deviousness, incompetency, or lunacy. So once I got through, they said, hey, this is great. Let's get back on track and win this deal. So it, you know, there's, I don't think there's any two high-tech companies with more divergent cultures than HP and Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft was considered the Green Beret and HP was considered Boy Scouts. So in terms of one slide representing the challenges, that does it. And it talks about objectives and also talks about recommendations for overcoming those differences. And I, again, would recommend people to look at the HBR article or my white paper that's on the website on the two-slide methodology, because it's also in that. The other slide is on incremental value. And this is, again, a process from the program on negotiation where you get each side to talk about what are their fundamental business objectives for why they're trying to partner or ally with the other. What do they want out of this relationship? And you also talk about each side's view on key underlying interests. So if the fundamental business objectives are addressed, there's going to be side benefit, typically longer term, typically more separate than combined. And then once you have a clear understanding of that top part of the slide, it's a 2x2 table. Then and only then do you say, how might we collaborate? What might be possible teaming scenarios to accomplish the creation of those or the fulfillment of those fundamental business objectives and the underlying interests? And I should state that for both the incremental value slide and the value impediment slide, I mean, for both of these, you're going to be hearing from 6 to 8, maybe 10 people on each side of the alliance. You're going to get a lot of data from a lot of people. And the task of the alliance manager is to distill that down to 3 to 5 points in each of these 4 cells in the slides. And both of these slides is a little bit complicated to describe this verbally, but each of the slides has four cells on the top and then one row underneath. And so it takes a lot of creative effort and vision and deep thinking to distill down what you're hearing from the voice of the collective to the simple essence of challenges and opportunities. And you know, I was blown away when I started using these two slides in HP, because as I looked at how these slides developed over time, I realized it really does capture the essence of this. And this content was 100% leverageable to every activity I had to do. I could use them for executive briefings, for press releases, for the creation of go-to-market marketing slides, marketing material, for sales tools and sales collateral. I mean, especially in the area of co-selling, you need to be able to tell them, here's how you overcome your differences and work together. Here's how you can think about and see the other side. And, you know, in working with a team, it provides a basis for, you know, day-to-day, just-in-time, just-enough kind of training. So it was something that was 100% leverageable to any process or methodology or system in the area of alliance management. So, I mean, I know it's astounding, Peter, to think that you really can do this, but I've done this. And one great example is on the Capgemini Intel Alliance, where they created these two slides, and it fundamentally transformed the alliance top to bottom, and the two slides were used as a centerpiece for their business plan. It doesn't mean we don't have other documents, contracts, teaming agreements, but this is the essence. These two slides capture the essence in a radically simple way.
Okay, because
describes an alliance.
That's what I was thinking. Shouldn't you be adding one slide more, in the sense that it is a slide with an overview of the alliance? So what is the alliance? What are the objectives before you really dive into the value impediments and incremental value?
I think it's captured in the fundamental business objectives of the incremental value slide.
Okay. So it's in there. So you're really capturing it all almost. Yeah, you're capturing it all in two slides.
And what's really useful is this is radically simple in an overwhelmingly complex job. And it turns out to be very empowering to cut through the complexity, and the value impediments neutralizes dysfunctional drama, which we end up dealing with a lot.
Yeah. And this will be a living document, I assume. So we will update it on a regular basis.
Yes, it's constant. But in a sense, it becomes an obsession. Where I would take these two slides with me all the time. And when I'm in meetings or in any kind of interaction, I'm always looking for input. What are these people saying? What's happening in this meeting that might influence the content? And I've got reference material to draw from. So not everybody all the time is going to want to hear all of this. Typically, just my immediate managers be willing to spend that time to go through both of these, because it takes some time to describe them both. But it's a living document that's constantly being evolved and iterated, and constantly, you know, looking for input and opportunities to share it.
And based on the two slides, you will jointly define action points to overcome the value impediments and create more value.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It drives the contract. It drives. I think of two documents for if you say organizing or managing alliance. One is an informal teaming agreement. It wouldn't be an expansion on these two slides. We talk about milestones and roadmaps and metrics. And then the formal contract. And I say put into contract what you want to die, you know, because the process of getting to legal agreement often sucks the life out of any activity.
Yeah.
But I'll put into agreement what has to be put into it, you know, the intellectual property issues, significant financial investments, people commitment, major milestones, but most of the work is in the informal teaming agreement.
Yeah, I read an article yesterday, and I believe it was HP P&G Alliance or outsourcing, where the legal document was 1,600 pages, and it captured everything that it needed to capture. But then for the working documents, they referred to a couple of slides like yours, where they had the real objectives and the real way of working together.
Yeah. Well, interesting thing is on the last I heard on the HP Canon Alliance, for the overall alliance, they have no contract.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what I will do is I will include the links to both the HBR document as well as your two-slide white paper in the show notes at the www.simoons.com/episode3.
Okay.
So it will be easy for the listeners to click and download it directly from your site or from the HBR site.
Okay, I've got a link for both.
Okay,
I know great. That,
I will include them.
Okay.
So now this is really about organizing an existing alliance, or at least we know that we are going to partner and we look into organization of it. But how would you select a partner to collaborate with?
Well, from my experience at HP, it's more of a theoretical question, because with the exception of one partnering discussion, which was actually an acquisition, the other party was, in a sense, given by the executives, go work with Microsoft. Or it was obvious based on their position in the ecosystem, or it was already an already existing alliance. So, you know, I've never done that in my experience at HP, never done, you know, partner selection due diligence. And I think back to, you know, like a marriage, how do you go out and select your marriage partner? And it's like, well, there's some selection, but it kind of just happens.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's an interesting parallel, as with some alliances, you really see the selection. So with some marriage, there are some businesses that make a business out of selecting a marriage partner, and they probably have the methodology for it. Never experienced it though.
But I think it comes back. I think it comes back to value. What value do you need to have created with you? What technology is missing? What product is missing as part of your solution? So who can fill the holes in what you want to bring to the world?
True. And as long as you are going to answer that question when you talk to a potential partner, I think you make the right decision. The moment, and I've seen it happen, the moment the senior executive says, well, I spoke to my neighbor and he works at company says and so, and we feel that we need to work together, I don't think that's the right starting point.
Yeah. But the other thing that happens is, you know, you often enter into a relationship with one objective. And again, if it's long term and value creating and you've got high trust and open communication and collaboration, you're going to discover other opportunities you hadn't even imagined.
Yeah, I agree. So when you already mentioned a couple of alliances you were involved in, which one of the alliances was for you the best learning experience that taught you the most on the topic of alliances?
Wow. Well, I mean, I cut my teeth between HP and IBM, and that was an interesting experience. Probably the most is between HP and Microsoft. I mean, I was on the corporate team that established that. And, you know, I helped brief the executives. I oversaw 120 alliance managers at one time. And then I migrated that alliance into HP services in a couple different functions there. And I'll be a little bit controversial. I mean, if people look at the Harvard Business Review article, they'll see some controversy in how HP at the time characterized Microsoft. But I mean, I think Microsoft's kind of like Google, given their dominant position in the ecosystem. Partnering is different with them than they are with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I would say strategic alliances, as I defined it, where you're actually collaborating to create new value, was challenging with Microsoft because of their dominant position. And probably the best example was between HP and SAP, where it was true collaboration. And then even my very first alliance, which was between HP and the phone company, US West, it's hard to answer this question. It's kind of like when you were dating Peter, who was your best girlfriend?
My wife.
And where did you learn about women?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. It's a difficult question, but for some people, they really have an experience. And often what we see, it's the negative experience that teaches them the most on the topic.
Yes, failures. The failures are very valuable.
Yeah. So what was for you the moment that you realized that collaboration is an essential element for you or your business?
Well, it does go back to 1989, and that was between HP and US West. And I mean, that was my first personal exposure to an alliance. And I got to tell you, it was love at first sight. You know, it was like, wow. I mean, to be involved in something that spans all of the functional areas of the business and you know, impacts from the executives all the way down. To be involved with something where people say, we don't know why these fail. You know, this is an art and a science, and we're still struggling to figure it out. I mean, that was attractive to me. Mm-hmm. And the challenging environment, the complexity, the all-consuming nature of this kind of work, it was just something attractive about it.
At the wow moment you mentioned, did they already call it an alliance, or did you discover over time that you actually were working on an alliance, what we call an alliance?
No, we did call it a strategic alliance.
Okay.
Because it was core to HP's product offering, and it was core to the phone company needing to rewrite their billing system and their customer care system, which were both in COBOL at the time. And you know, you don't have COBOL developers anymore. And so it was strategic for them in these two central systems to get them rewritten. And they wanted to move them from COBOL to C++, an object-oriented architecture. And they needed our tools to do that. Well, they needed our tools, but they needed to be significantly enhanced. Oh. And so it was central and strategic for both companies.
Okay. Well, because I recognized when you said the wow, I recognized my wow moment again, in the sense that I know when it was, but for me it was that I was developing a customer and we were working the customer, and basically through partnership to partnering with the customer and jointly go to market, we were making business together. And
yeah.
Then I read an article about alliances, and I had my wow moment where I said, this is what I'm doing with this customer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we didn't call it an alliance, but it was an alliance what we were shaping.
Well, do you remember what year that was?
That was 2001, 2002, okay. Maybe. Yes.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting where you go, oh, that's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at people or organizations entering into a collaboration, what would be your number one recommendation for them and why?
So, you know, I think I said at the beginning, strategic alliance managers are bold, clear, and direct. We can't afford to mince words. And so this is definitely going to be a bold recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be to be very clear about what their role is and what their value is to the alliance team and to the overall business. And for me, it really comes down to identity. Who do we think we are? You know, are we a mini CEO? And I think a lot of people go to that. They say, yeah, I'm like a CEO over this business. I think that's part of the picture. I mean, you talked before about businesses need a deeper type of collaboration than they're doing today. I think the world needs to wake up. I think businesses need to wake up. There's a big thing called the conscious capitalism movement. So I'm not sure the world needs more CEOs. And if you think of that, if you think of yourself as like a CEO, you're going to be frustrated because you're not going to have the budget you expect. You're not going to have the people resources you expect. You're not going to have the decision-making authority and the power that a CEO has. I mean, I describe an alliance manager as someone who does the impossible, gets collaboration to happen between competitors, does the impossible with nothing, not quite nothing, but pretty close to it, In the Eye of a Hurricane, Overwhelming Complexity and Dysfunctional Drama. So I would say the best thing, this is my punchline, Peter, the best thing for an alliance manager is to really embrace the idea that they're a creator. They're about value creation in that alliance. You know, I don't want to bring religion into this, but I would say, think about the idea that maybe you're the God of this alliance. Now, immediately people say, oh, geez, you're going to, you know, people are going to get really into ego and become grandiose. And well, you know, they'll work through that. But the point is, you're responsible for the level of trust in the relationship. You're responsible for the overall environment. You're responsible to empower everybody. And the best empowerment actually comes from the idea of being of service and giving away your best ideas. And then they come back with gain, and your knowledge increases, your presence increases, your actual power increases as you strive to obsolete yourself, which I think is what God's trying to do in our lives. God's trying to make it so we don't need him, so we can be the powerful, grand value creators that we are. So my single point of advice to somebody new to this is spend some time being very clear about who you are and what your role is and what your value is to the alliance and to the business.
Wow. That's very nice. Yeah, good. So one question I'm planning to ask to all of my guests, and I already gave them in the briefing to you, so you have probably prepared it. What business book or collaboration book would you recommend to our listeners? And I know you've written a book yourself, and I will include that in the show notes. Of course, they should read that. But do you have an additional recommendation?
Well, let me talk about my book, because when I wrote it, I didn't write it with the idea of selling a lot. I had three objectives: to collect my thoughts, legitimize the concepts, and build a platform for launching my business. And I've accomplished those objectives. So whether or not my book sells or not, frankly, I don't care. In fact, I would say, don't buy my book. there's two books that really come to mind. One is a book called Change Your World: How Ordinary People Accomplish Extraordinary Results. And it's written by a guy, Robert E. Quinn, at the University of Michigan College of Business. He's a distinguished MBA professor, and he studies Christ, Gandhi, and Martin Luther King, and describes four different types of change agents, including a transformational change agent, what these three individuals were. And then he talks about 20 attributes of what it means to be a transformational change agent. And I think if an alliance manager is not about fundamentally changing their alliance and their business, what are we doing? So that's, and I've also written a white paper where I've described a transformational strategic alliance manager derived from Robert Quinn's work. The second book is something called The Corporate Mystic, and is by Kate Hendricks and Gay Hendricks and Kate Ludeman. And it's a small book, but there is from their experience consulting at the executive level in corporations. And the first sentence in their book says, if you want to find a true mystic, you're better off finding one in a corporate boardroom than you are in a monastery or a cathedral. Because this stuff works. Mm-hmm. Spiritual ideas, spiritual principles work all the time, everywhere. Now, executives might use different words, but they're talking about the same stuff. So it's an affirmation that, you know, bringing spirituality into business and into alliances is valid and helpful. So those are the two books I'd recommend.
Okay. So I will include them in the show notes. And I, based on what you said, I believe you added just two books to my reading list.
Good.
Well, we're nearing the end of this interview, this conversation, Joe. And I think it is a very interesting conversation. I will include the material we discussed in the show notes over at www.simoons.com/episode3. But before we part, basically two closing questions. Very basic, but very important. Where can people find more about you?
Well, I've got a website called spibr, spiritualprinciples.org. So it stands for Spiritual Principles in Business Relationships. Or they could just do Google on Joe Kittle and I'm not the wrestler. yeah.
Okay. So that's not a previous career.
Right.
Okay. Clear.
Your second question?
Second question. Anything you would like to share with our listeners that we have not yet discussed?
Well, three things came to mind. One is live a life of excessive happiness. I continue to get great joy in working in alliances. So embrace that joy. I would say, push the envelope. And my career philosophy has been that each day I wake up and I go, well, today they might fire me or they might promote me or I might quit. So I'd say push the envelope and transform strategic alliances. And lastly, I just say, bring into your life your all. When you come to work, bring everything with you, your spiritual life, your religious life, your philosophies, and shine on.
Great, great advice. Thank you very much, Joe, and thanks for being in the conversation.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.